now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio and your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is May 9, 2014, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We are here for probably about the next 2 hours, and what a show we have got for you tonight. We are alive, and we will be joined in about 20 minutes by Chris Savia of The Anomalist. Now, many times at the beginning of this program, we run down the news of the day, which we are going to do on this program as well. And oftentimes when I'm running down the news of the day, you will hear me reference The Anomalist. It is one of my favorite websites. In fact, every day when I go to lunch, I check out what is new on The Anomalist. And today, we do not have a guest for the show. And I was sitting there thinking, who can I get for a guest for the show today? And I was sitting there reading The Anomalist, and all of a sudden it just struck me, why don't I interview somebody from The Anomalist? And so just purely, I didn't think there was any way it would be figured out and booked and ready to go by tonight, but I thought, I'm going to try this. I'm just going to toss it out. And so I sent an email, and lo and behold, Chris Savia is going to be joining us on the program today. I am so excited to have him on the program. There's so much great stuff on that website. Everything we talk about on this program, I mean, all of the different topics, everything. I mean, if you go up there to the Anomalist front page today, which, by the way, is anomalist.com, easy to find, the top stories today include several photographs of a full-length entity in a house. There is a story on the elf whisperers in Ireland, a country where it says here 54% of the population do not deny that elves exist. 54%. Fishermen capture creepy audio of Bigfoot screams in Kentucky. We're actually going to play some of that audio for you here in a moment. Experts confirm meteor strike in Ontario. I mean, everything you could possibly discuss and a show like this is tackled every day in The Anomalist. So we're going to talk to Chris about the website itself. Been around for a long time, dating back to the mid-90s. Won a lot of awards. If you've never gone up there, I don't know what's taken you so long. But head up there and check that out. So he's going to be on in about 20 minutes, and it is going to be a good time. We're going to run down a lot of the news stories of the day. There are plenty of them, many of them, of course, linked up at our website, which is AfterDarkRadioShow.com. If you go up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, on the left-hand side of the page is a list of stories in the news, all of which are gathered from Unexplained-Mysteries.com. That's where all of those stories come from. Of course, there's tons of stories up at ArtBell.com and our Facebook page as well. In a couple of weeks, Andrew, who is my Facebook page admin, is going to be on the program. He's been following this type of subject matter for about the past 20 years. And he reached out when we started the show on the Dark Matter Radio Network, and he said, listen, I would love to help you out with the Facebook page. And I said, sure. And we've currently surpassed, we're at 2,184 likes. And when I started this several months ago, I think I was at about 400 likes, so he's increased it exponentially. He's up there posting stories all the time. So many great stories up there for you to go up there and check out on the After Dark Radio Show Facebook page, which, of course, you can search After Dark Radio Show on Facebook or go to facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow, and there it is. So we will have him on the program in a couple of weeks. Also coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to be joined by, hopefully, the guide that took me on the tour of Haunted New Orleans when I was there for WrestleMania. I know a lot of people are very excited to hear him, so he'll hopefully be on in a couple of weeks. Got a lot of stuff coming up, so it should be a good time. Now, next week, we will not be here live. Next week will be a replay. Why? I will not be in town. I'm heading to the Grand Canyon with my wife. We're going on a road trip. I've always wanted to go to the Grand Canyon. I've always wanted to take a road trip throughout the Southwest. We looked at the calendar, and this is the best time to do it. Hopefully, maybe, I will be able to come back with some stories. One of my favorite stories from the old days of Coast to Coast was the discussion of the supposed Egyptian artifacts found in the Grand Canyon. Now, I don't know if I'm going to see any Egyptian artifacts. I strongly suspect that I will not. But perhaps during our travels, we will stop off at some local shops, and maybe there will be some legends that we can talk about when we come back from the trip. So that's coming up this coming week, and I will be back the following week with a brand new show. So we'll have a good replay next week. If you're new to the show, for example, if you haven't ever had a chance to check out the After Dark Radio Show, this is your first time listening, you'll be able to hear a replay next week on the program. And if you did not hear last week's show, it is up right now at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Matty Beckerman talking about his film Alien Abduction. We talked all sorts of different topics. Matty Beckerman had actually been on about 2 hours earlier with Jimmy, but we had a double booking, essentially, where he did Jimmy's show and then 2 hours later scheduled for my show. And so luckily, I had a lot of questions to ask him that had nothing to do with what he talked about earlier, including his next project, which is going to be looking at past life regression. So that show was a lot of fun. That is up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com right now. So head up there and check that out. Now, these Bigfoot sounds. I talked about this a little bit earlier. A lot of this is up if you head up to the Anomalist, anomalist.com, and we'll be talking about a lot of this with Chris later on in the program. I presume he has already heard all of this. And so I am going to play a bunch of this for you right now, and I want you to let me know what you think about this. We've got a couple of them here. We have got Kentucky. I jumped the gun right there. We've got Kentucky Sasquatch screams caught on tape, and we've also got a Jim Sherman recording of the from the BFRO. The BFRO's Jim Sherman had a clip that he played at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference last weekend. Now, all of this audio is available both linked up at anomalous.com, and also, if you head up to YouTube, you can find it up there as well. But I want to play some of this audio for you, and maybe you can tell me what you think about this a little bit later on here in the evening. This here is Kentucky Sasquatch Screams caught on tape. There's a lot of audio here, so bear with me as I head to the proper area here on this for you to hopefully hear some of this audio. I believe that you can. Initially, they've just got the screams in the background. I can read some of this here. In the craziness of the moment, it says here, I grabbed my iPhone from the tackle box and began recording. The quality is very poor. So take note of the sounds of the birds in the wind, distinct from the high-pitched squeals and grumbling, which remain constant through the video. He says he does not wholeheartedly believe in the mysterious creatures of the woods, but what he heard was very real and very terrifying. I know there's always videos like these and people alike who will say it's staged or it's the wind or something, which is fine. I don't care, he says. I just wanted to share this because I thought it was insane that it was actually happening. So Let's hear some of this audio. It's very quiet, so I'll try and pump the audio here a little bit.
I have chills.
Let's actually go to the, there's actually part of it here that has been, they've turned up the audio, so let's hear some of this. Here we go. So that right there, obviously, is the guys in the background, but you can hear kind of the screeching in the background. What do you think that screeching is? That's a horrifying noise right there. Let's play that one more time. The high-pitched screeching.
Come on, scared.
Serious, dude? Like, I'm getting chills. It's like so many different noises. It sounds like somebody's dying over there. Do you hear that scream? Listen. I've never heard that in my life.
So what is it? Screeching. He apologizes, by the way, for all the talking in the video. It really was insane, he says. I hope you at least heard a little bit of one of the craziest nights spent outdoors in my life thus far. I am not a gullible idiot. He says, I've spent my whole life outdoors, fishing, hunting, hiking, camping, canoeing. I've become accustomed to the sounds of nature, but never once have I heard what I heard tonight, and I don't know if I ever will again. That is the first clip right there. This is from two men in Kentucky who heard these vocalizations. And by the way, if you want to comment on any of this, my Twitter handle, @BrianAlvarez, you can tweet to me there. And please, if you can, use the hashtag DMRadioNet. That is #DMRadioNet. Tweet me and let me know what you think of these sounds. The second clip here. This is from the Ohio Bigfoot Conference last weekend, and it is from Jim Sherman of the BFRO. He is playing some recordings that he made. Clip is a little bit shorter, but the quality is significantly better. So listen to this and let me know what you think.
All these are in one location.
One night.
It was worth the time. It was. Did you hear that shift change there?
Yeah.
And that's a throat clearing. A throat clearing. That's awesome. And then there might be some language in the world.
So there you go. He says all of that was taken on one night in one location. What is that noise? I think the whale in the middle of this clip is the most disconcerting. Let's play that howling whale again. Don't like it. What is it? Play it one more time.
Shift change there?
Yeah.
And that's a
all out there in the woods in the middle of the night. So what is it? Let me know on Twitter, @BrianAlvarez, using the hashtag DMRadio.net. We've got Shane here saying, I wonder if Bigfoots have a camouflage ability like chameleons. Obviously, they can hit octaves like humans. What do you think that was? Should I play it again or is everybody freaked out? I got the lights on here. If I were listening to this in the dark, I'm not sure I would be in such a giving mood to play this again. But one more time. Let's just hear that wail one more time. I gotta say, that's some of the best howls I've ever heard. That is, if you'd like to Google that, it is up at bigfootevidence.blogspot.com, or you can just Google Jim Sherman audio clips and check those out. A lot of comments here on the page. Outstanding recording, sounds eerily similar to the Ohio Moan. A lot of different comments about this. So let me know what you think it is, and we'll discuss that with Chris a little bit later on in the evening. So again, check out theanomalous.com, by the way. And right up there in the May 8th update is the Jim Sherman clips, which are something that I don't know. I don't know what to make of them. All right, we're going to get Chris here on the line. I want to talk to him about these clips here, as well as a lot of other different topics. If you've got questions for Chris as we go along, the place to be is Twitter at Brian Alvarez. Just tweet me there #dmradio.net and let me know what you think about all this. If you have any questions, let me know there as well. And I'll ask Chris as many as we can get to during the time that he has given us. Jay here, by the way, says, it almost sounds like an air raid siren. Very freaky. And he did put in the #dmradio.net. So let us know what you think, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to get Chris here on the line. Should be a fun time. So hold that dial, everyone, and we'll be right back with Chris.
Algo me hace pensar que todo fue tal como debía ser. Los esqueletos caminan alrededor y yo avanzo con ellos, amor. En el oscuro laberinto del ayer, tus palabras se van, se hunden en el mar. En el oscuro laberinto del ayer, tus palabras se van en el alba.
We're back here on the show, everybody. After Dark Radio, Brian Alvarez here, Dark Matter Radio Network. Very excited today to be joined by Chris Savia of The Anomalist. And Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Brian. How about yourself?
I am doing great. Is it Chris, is it Savia or Savia?
Savia.
Savia. There we go. Chris Savius here on the line. I was alerted that you have never done a podcast interview before. Is that true?
That's right. It's my first.
That's impossible. How is this possible that nobody has ever had you on their program before?
Because they have good sense.
I am a gigantic fan of The Anomalist. And we're going to talk about the website here. I don't know if you listened to the show a little bit earlier, but I was playing some of the Bigfoot howls that were posted up on The Anomalist today. The two men in Kentucky and also the Jim Sherman audio clips, which are pretty amazing. So I'm going to want to talk to you about those. But first off, tell everybody a little bit about The Anomalist for those that have never visited the site.
Well, The Anomalous is a daily review of weird news ranging from UFOs, Bigfoot, weird science and such. We've been around since 1999 as a website, and we've just been feeding the internet and giving the best that we have to offer.
Now you guys, you'd done like a print Anomalous first, correct?
Yeah, we began that back in 1994. That was Patrick Weege. He is the gentleman and the genius behind The Anomalous. And he was doing that. He did several issues. And if you actually do visit the Anomalist, you will be able to find, you can get like the first issue for free.
That's right. The PDFs are up there. If you want to get the first issue of the Anomalist, you can. You know what I thought? I could just rave about the Anomalist forever, but in 1995, I really wanted to start a newsletter or a magazine. I had had a very short stint in college. I'm talking like less than 2 years. I went to community college, and I had gotten an A in English, and I wanted to be a writer. And so I figured, I got an A in English. I may as well quit while I'm ahead. So I left college, and I wanted to start my own publication. And it came down to either a wrestling newsletter, a pro wrestling newsletter, or a newsletter, a news magazine like The Anomalist. And I went back and forth, and I did like a practice issue of each, and I ended up settling on pro wrestling. But the fact that you guys at the exact same time started The Anomalist, and you kept it going, and it's what it is today, I just kind of look back on it, and I'm like, man, I could have... That's almost what I wanted to do, and I didn't do it. I'm not sad that I didn't, because I'm happy I went the pro wrestling route, because it's done very well. But something like The Anomalous was what I really wanted to do, and so I'm a little bit jealous that you guys did it, and it's such a big success, because I don't know. I always thought that would be so much fun. Is it something every day that, I mean, is it still, when did you first get started with it?
Well, I started writing for The Anomalous in September of 2011. Patrick was looking for someone to fill in as a deputy news editor. I decided, you know, what the hey, threw my hat in the ring. I did my first round of write-ups, and Patrick's like, yeah, you're good. You're going to stay on there. And from there, I've just been happy contributing my writing on a regular basis since.
So what was your background? I mean, when did you, obviously you must have been a reader of The Anomalous when he put out a request. Is that kind of how it happened? You were a reader and he put out a request and you answered?
Yeah, I've been following the website for quite some time. I remember actually seeing the first ad for The Anomalous in 14 times. And I just went from, when I saw they were looking for someone and I knew that I was trying to make a name for myself as a writer, also reading about, everything in Fortiana made me, you know, it was just like the perfect confluence of every influence in the universe for me.
Now, how old are you right now?
I'm 43.
43. So when did you, let's see, 43. So you would be born in the late 60s. I mean, were you kind of 1970? So were you a child of the Bigfoot era? I mean, do you remember that sort of thing from your childhood, or when did you first get interested in this?
Oh my goodness, I remember. I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and watching a UFO program. One of the programs that did stand out was, where these people, I guess they were police investigating UFO. And it had this really cheesy effect where it was just a single eye looking out at the TV, looking out at the people underneath the UFO, and it terrified me. I still remember seeing Andre the Giant portraying Bigfoot on The Bionic Man.
It's classic.
Yes. And hearing Leonard Nimoy discuss it, giving the introduction on In Search Of, that music that just haunts you.
So from childhood, I mean, did you then grow up? I mean, I guess tell us a little bit about your life. I mean, how did this affect your life? And did you know from a young age that you wanted to be involved in this? Or did you kind of go in another direction and it was sort of a side hobby? Or how did everything come about?
Well, I was, I did have an interest in it. I would, like, watch it on TV when we would have, whenever I would find a magazine. I mean, it came in and out of my life. I mean, from a little kid when it was huge in the 70s, in the 80s when the Time Life book came out, with all the various stories about, mothers who have a burning sensation in their hand because their daughter burnt themselves a half a country away. And I was, I just remember reading about that stuff. And at first I'd be thinking, this is a really, really good story. But reading more and more, reading people like John Keel and the like, I started to realize that there may be something more than a simple story that I'm looking at.
So you're a little bit older than me. I'm 38, but I remember, like, I made my mom subscribe to those. We're probably talking about the same Time Life books. Are we talking the black ones with the, the time? Those were great. I think I still have the entire collection of those, and
they're worth a fortune.
I don't know what they're worth, but yeah, they're probably, I've seen a few of them at used bookstores, but I don't know if anyone has the whole, but I've got it in the garage. I mean, did you subscribe to all of those?
No, I had to go to the library and look at them whenever I had the free time after school.
Was there any particular subject that attracted you more than any other?
Ghosts.
Because
I always felt that ghosts were not something that I would ever really encounter, but they were like mice. Every house almost had them, and I figured that one day or another I would encounter a ghost.
And did you?
No.
Still waiting?
Still waiting, still trying. I will, keep an eye out on my neighborhood, see if I see, strange lights. Or I'll just stay up late at night, listen to the house, and try to say, is that my house settling, or is that just, or is that something paranormal? And the thing is that I have not heard anything paranormal, only because I set the bar pretty high to make me go, oh my goodness, that really is something out of the ordinary.
Now, as someone who's grown up, and now the internet has kind of changed everything, And now, I mean, you can see a ghost picture everywhere, but you've also got Photoshop, you know what I mean? And you've got all of these alien photographs, but God only knows now what's, I mean, I would say 99% of it. I mean, if any of it's real, most of it's still not real. So, I mean, as you've followed this throughout the years and kind of, I'm sure given what you do, you're just bombarded with stuff. I mean, has it made you more or less skeptical of the reality of, for example, ghosts?
I would have to say that it makes me very skeptical of all the news that is out there. There are a lot of people who do claim to see ghosts, UFOs, who have seen Bigfoot or even have Bigfoot visit them on a regular basis in their backyard. I remember a woman in Indiana was discussing that a year or two ago, and it's just that if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Sure.
But it's also good to at least hear them out and see what they're talking about that's common, because either what they're talking about that's in that common vein is folklore, or there may be a shred of truth that's shared that is part of that very tenuous signal that's being drowned out by the noise of Photoshopped UFOs, dust orbs in a camera, things like that.
Now, I want to talk about these howls a little bit. I want to mostly talk about the Jim Sherman audio. We can talk about the two men in Kentucky who got these screams. But you see a lot of stuff on the internet, especially on YouTube. My God, there's something wacky on YouTube every day, and most of it, I'm sure, is just ridiculous. But the BFRO. Jim Sherman, I mean, this is not just some random person who you don't know their name, you don't know anything about them, you can't find them. I mean, this guy has some credibility, and he's got these recordings, and they're very strange. I have no idea what they are. They're certainly very curious. What do you make of the BFR recordings that Jim Sherman recorded?
They make my hair stand on end.
They're very creepy.
Yes, they are. They are unlike anything I have heard in my life. I've heard recordings like this from other investigations into Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and they're consistent. It's just that we just have the recording, and there really is no real analog that we can give that can say that those howls that we're hearing are Bigfoot. On the other hand, when you're looking at when you're listening to the Kentucky recording, that one is really bad to listen to because it's done on an iPhone.
Yeah.
There's so much noise and static on the line. And when I did listen to it, it sounded like it was very tiny wildlife that's going peep, 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 peep.
Yeah.
and it was hard for me to really tell if I was if that was us was I listening for, or if there may be something that might be very low register or there was subsonic.
Now, have you got any sort of feedback? I don't know. I guess I could ask you, how many emails do you get on an average day from people that either have a story to contribute or they want to comment on the story? Is it a lot or is it a little?
It depends on what we were writing about. I mean, we do have slow news days. We do have people who do contact us if they do have stories they want to share. And what we do is we advise them, maybe you might want to maybe contact Phantoms and Monsters or reach out to Mysterious Universe, because, you know, they do like to hear the anecdotes from first-person eyewitness accounts. But at The Anomalous, what we are here to do first and foremost is to pick out the top news available to raise the signal and you know, let people know what we're looking at isn't just Giorgio Tsoukalos and Ancient Aliens.
I do like, I go there every day, usually during my my lunch, and I always read The Anomalous, and I like that. It's like you said, it's I mean, I can go to any website and see 9 million stories, but it's a good, there's usually like 5 or 6 stories. Sometimes a story will have a few different links in it that kind of relate to each other. And it's really like, it's the best of the best for any particular day. And I like that there's kind of, it's not really like a skeptical site, so to speak, but if there is something that a rational person would be skeptical about, you guys will comment on that. And yes, I guess, sir, what is the editorial policy, really, of The Anomalist?
The editorial policy is that we use our best judgment. But one of the other things that at least the way I approach the news and the links that I do find and our team does contribute, is the universe is associative, and everything does lead into everything else. And from that, you get the idea of what the larger picture is out there. And that helps inform, you know, what we have to research next. And it really is intriguing because it's always about seeing how far the rabbit hole goes.
Let's talk about some of your favorite stories that you have posted over the last couple of years. Is there any story that maybe you've been following, or maybe it's a photograph, or I mean, I personally, this Bigfoot howl that we played tonight from Jim Sherman, I mean, I'd be talking about that for years. I mean, is there anything that really sticks out as like the most amazing thing that you've come across in the time you've been working for The Anomalist?
Absolutely, and this is something that broke fairly recently. It was all thanks to the to Graham Hancock. It's the discovery that Göbekli Tepe and Göbekli Tepe is in Turkey. Gunung Padang in Indonesia, being a structure that's 20,000 years old, built by humans.
We talked about this a while back. So this is the one that some people believe it's a hill, correct?
Well, they believe it's a hill, and when the archaeologists start looking, they realize that the pyramid at the top, the hill was just part of the pyramid, and it appeared to have been buried for whatever reason.
So you're convinced that this is a legitimate 20,000-year-old pyramid from what you've determined?
I am not convinced. I am intrigued by it, and I do feel that the science they're doing over there is solid, and they're just not, just making a wacky guess here.
What would this mean? I mean, what are we talking about in terms of what would have to be rewritten if it were determined that this was, in fact, 20,000 years old?
The score of human history would have to be rewritten. What it does is, everyone believes that, you know, human history as we know it began 10,000 years ago after the Ice Age. And from there, we moved through the various Stone Ages and developed metal and all that. But the thing is that during the Ice Age, maybe 20,000 years ago, the seas were much lower. The area around northern Australia, Indonesia, Java were much lower, creating a continent called Sundaland. And what this does suggest is that there was a advanced, for that time, civilization where they were building megalithic objects, and goodness knows what else they were also creating that did not survive the years.
Now, how is this tied into other stories that maybe you have put up? I mean, what is some of the other evidence that history as we know it is not history as it actually was?
That is a very good question. I think it'd be facile to, like, mention the Egyptian helicopter hieroglyphics.
Mm-hmm.
But looking a little further, we do have the Vimanas that are mentioned in Indian folklore. Even though they are quite fantastic, they are part and parcel of what they're legendary in the Indian subcontinent. The stories of them, using weapons that are on the scale of atomic bombs. I would be surprised if we found anything that was even close to that and lend credence to there being a civilization as old as 20,000 years ago and having jet fighters and nuclear bombs.
Now, there are a lot of topics that have been discussed on the Anomalist of late regarding the Loch Ness Monster.
Right.
For some reason, I talked about this last week. There was a period where there didn't seem to be any Loch Ness Monster reports. And the next thing you know, it's like every couple of weeks there's something new coming out of the Loch. Where do you fall in terms of pro or con the existence of an actual Loch Ness Monster?
I think that it's plausible that there is something that is large living in the Loch, whether it is a relic to a plesiosaur or if it's a giant mollusk, or if it just happens to be a wayward dwarf fish, has yet to be determined. I really don't like to, completely buy into something because in my experience, every time I've said it's exactly this, the next day I am proven to be absolutely wrong, and I don't like that feeling.
So what is the latest on the Apple Maps photo of the Loch Ness Monster? Because everybody seemed, first it was a mystery, then there were people that determined that it was a boat, and then there were apparently people saying it was not a boat. I mean, what is the most recent information we have about this photo?
That's a very good question. That was not something I really have been following, but it is a very interesting little thing because, of course, Nessie, there were no sightings throughout the entire 2013. And also, there's a lot of really interesting things that are going on around Nessie. For example, one of Britain's first llamas has declared that Nessie is a Naga. They actually set up a shrine to Nessie. But, of course, this is combined with the fact that they're trying to promote their new Buddhist center in Scotland.
A Naga?
A Naga. Nagas are, I guess you could say they were the East Asian equivalent of reptilians.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. And so they have determined that Nessie is a Naga.
Yes, these Buddhist monks have said Nessie is a Naga, and the Loch Ness phenomena is a spiritual phenomena, which is which does dovetail with what some people think. Aleister Crowley thought that Nessie was some sort of spiritual construct.
Did you do the anomalous story about the number stations recently?
The one about number stations on the internet?
Yes.
I did listen to that, and I just thought it was very interesting, and I'm very glad that our spycraft is catching up with the internet.
I, when I was a child, got a shortwave radio. For those of you that don't know what number stations are, back in the day on shortwave radio, you could turn into certain frequencies, and there would be sometimes a woman's voice, sometimes a mechanical voice, and it would just be reciting numbers. And it was very creepy. And the belief, I guess, is that these are, communication, spy-related communication. Is that kind of the general belief as to what these are?
Yeah, the spies have something that are called one-time pads. There are a bunch of random numbers, but if you understand what the key to the code is, you can use those pads to transmit information. And the thing is that it's uncrackable unless you actually have the book and you know the key. And it's really secure, more secure than the NSA would like to have. Reading out those numbers, you just look in the book, you find the right page, you follow the numbers, and there you have it. It tells you to drink more Ovaltine.
And now we've got like this, it's moved to the internet. And I guess there was even, I can't remember the details, but there was like a weird Twitter that, tell me about this Twitter.
Ooh, I can tell you about that in just two shakes of a lamb's tail, because what I did in preparation, I actually opened up a whole mess of links.
I got to hear about this Twitter.
I did not want to be a absent-minded professor, but actually one of the websites that they also write for is Who Forted.
Yes.
And I've been writing for them for quite some time, and I remember I did cover this story, and I'm just trying to pull it up. And I'm very surprised you brought that up, because that was a relatively small story, but the thing is that it did capture Patrick's idea.
I'll let you look for it here. I'll talk about another.
Please do.
I can't even remember where I saw it. Maybe it was on my own After Dark Facebook page, but there was a list of the 10 strangest broadcasts of all time. Maybe you saw this as well. And I mean, one of them was I can't even remember the 10, but like the Max Headroom, ArtBell.com. I should know ArtBell.com of all places, for crying out loud. I'll go up and I should know this. Keith is chastising me right now for not knowing ArtBell.com. I got to go up there and read some of these to everybody, because I was fascinated. I wanted more than 10. I read the 10 and then I went investigating, trying to find more. Yes, here it is. It's on ArtBell.com. It is 10 strange unexplained broadcasts. It's a YouTube video. It's 3 minutes long. And it's awesome. Unfortunately, you can't actually see a lot of the broadcasts here, but it does include pirate TV stations presented by men in gas masks. I don't know why I find this so fascinating, but this and number stations I've always been very intrigued by. But did you find what you were looking for?
I am actually still looking. Oh, goodness.
I'll let you find it here. But yes, the top unexplained broadcasts. I can actually look through this list here, but some of these I'm sure many of you have heard about. I wish there was there's Radio Source SHGB something something, a signal from an area of space with no stars for 1,000 light years. That is one of them there. Swedish Rhapsody, which I guess is a number station. It broadcasts children's music and a female voice repeating numbers. That's creepy.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that was also the one of the stations they do have playing. But I think what you're thinking of is a Twitter feed that is called Undead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they were posting a string of numbers. Now, mind you,
yes,
when this story broke, this was around the time that Cicada 3301 was starting to gain some traction. And of course, people were thinking that Cicada 3301 was a recruiting tool for some spy agency in order to get the best of the best in terms of cryptography. Only recently, the NSA tweeted something that was encrypted, and apparently that was broke, and whoever broke the code are probably now, you know, getting their security clearance and begin work with the NSA.
So essentially, they put out a code, and if you were smart enough to break it, they wanted to hire you.
Yeah, that's what the NSA did. That's what they believe that Cicada 3301 was. Cicada 3301 was a little more involved because...
Tell everybody more about this in case they don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, beg your pardon. Cicada 3301, it seems to... You would think it was an artificial reality game where it begins where you have to figure out these different questions. And these questions are usually mathematical or dealing with programming. And from there, they will lead you to a website. You enter in various answers. And, of course, if you have the right answer, you're able to move on, and it gives you other clues. Maybe it might be a flyer put on a flagpole somewhere in Prague, and that'll have a code, and then you have to get with a few other people who may have seen a similar thing in Hawaii. And after that, you're able to finally discover what the Holy Grail is that they want you to find.
Why is something like a number station so creepy?
Number stations are creepy because it is something that is so completely random, and it's not something a sane human being would do, coming from a background that has nothing to do with espionage.
I just remember when I was a little kid, I got a shortwave radio, and you could get a book or a magazine. I can't remember what it was, but it would tell you what to tune into to hear these number stations, and I would always try and find them. And I remember the first time I actually found one, I was like, oh my God, it's real, you know, because you read about it, but you never like had an opportunity to actually hear it. And when I actually heard a number station, I was just like, it's like you're listening to something you're not supposed to hear. You know what I mean? Like, even though you don't know what it even is, it's just like you're not supposed to be hearing this, but you found it. And it was just, it was so creepy. So, yeah, I was fascinated by that article. What are some of the recent stories you've posted of late?
Some of the recent stories that I have posted have been, there's a city in China called Kaifeng City.
Yes.
And what happened was there was something exploded high overhead over a area about 500 miles across many cities. One morning, many Chinese people saw one object flaming across the sky, while other accounts say it looked like a large tadpole being tailed by several smaller tadpoles.
Sounds like a Loch Ness Monster photo we were talking about earlier.
Except in the sky.
Yeah. Looked like a tadpole, though.
Yeah. Well, they're using their flowery idiomatic language.
I see. So this is China's Roswell, as it's described here.
Yeah, and what happens is that whatever was, you know, flying overhead exploded, and pieces fell down, and a couple of pieces fell into the courtyard of these two brothers in Kaifeng. And when they woke up, they came over to see what was going on. They weren't thinking, and they picked up the pieces, and they were cool to the touch. Of course, if they had been... Now, from something re-entering the atmosphere, or if it really was a explosion, they probably would have been pretty hot and they would have burnt their hands, but no, they did not. The material they did find was strong and light. The investigators said it was more like asbestos, than anything else. And when he went to like a local airbase, you know, some of the mechanics are like, you know, we've never seen anything like this. It's better than anything we've seen in the planes that we're taking care of.
Wow.
And from what little I've been able to gather, I stumbled upon this story purely by chance because there was a Vimeo video about something being seen on Google's satellite image of two jets, and there's a blurry thing with a contrail behind it. So I was not able to find anything about it in Western media. I fired up Google Translate. I went to Baidu.com and used some clever wording using Translate. and I just happened to come upon this story, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is groundbreaking. This has not been posted anywhere else, and it was just something I needed to share with the greater UFO community.
So you broke this story?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
In the West.
Excellent. And this is not a new story. This was 1990.
Yeah, actually, it was... let me just double check when it was.
So did the article that you read through Google Translate, I mean, was it a new article? Like there was new information about it? Did you find, like, an old article from 1990?
No, I found this article was a retrospective. It was written back in 2007, and I think the other one was written back in 2011.
Hmm.
And the principal investigator, Zhang Guimin, he was hoping to get the word out about this to see what else other people might know and what they may remember from that day in June.
I want to apologize to everybody since I've been jumping to about 8 million different topics and not focusing on anything in particular. But every time you bring something up, I've got another question I've got to ask you. And hopefully one of these days we can do another show. I would love to do another show at some point. How much time do you have left?
Well, right now it is almost 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. I won't hold you much longer. I got a couple more here real quick. Just got to ask these questions.
Sure.
Tell me about, I remember reading sometime recently about supposed new Roswell footage that was like being kept under wraps.
Oh my goodness.
Tell me about this.
This is a really big story. This is dealing with the Roswell slides. Apparently,
yes,
somewhere out there in the American Southwest, somebody has slides from the day of the crash, and it can probably make or break everything that has to do with the Roswell case. And one of the things is that if this is the real deal, I was in possession of it, the first thing I would do is go to a trusted outlet. I'm certainly not going to go to CNN, MSNBC, or Fox because, of course, it'll end up being, you know, something on the side and be worth a giggle for about 5 minutes on TV. I'd want to go to places like The Grailing Report, Mysterious Universe, things, you know, sites like those to get the word out, and from there the story can gain traction to be treated seriously.
Go ahead.
And pretty much, you know, the Roswell Dream Team says that they have access to the slides, but the people who own these slides do not want anyone to take a look at them.
And I guess the first question is, what is supposedly on the slides, and why do the owners not want anyone to look at them?
That is...
the million-dollar question?
It really is the million-dollar question.
I mean, is this footage of bodies, or these slides of the craft, or do we know?
We don't know.
We don't know. We just know...
They're keeping under wraps that much.
But the word has got out that these slides, I mean, they're good, supposedly.
Yeah, they're good. And, you know, one of them supposedly shows an alien on a gurney.
That would be good.
It would?
That would be very good. So what? Where are we at in this story? I mean, are we waiting for maybe someone to make an agreement? Are we just sort of, is it just, this is the story, they don't want it known, let's try and build some fanfare around this and get the ball rolling? Or where are we in this story?
Being cynical, I think they're waiting for the people who own the slides to die, so that way they can get their hands on them and or finagle their way to get their hands on the slides.
So the people that have the slides, I mean, they haven't destroyed the slides,
no.
I presume. So
as far as we know, they have not, and if they are the real thing, I hope they do not.
So are they, I mean, do we know anything from the owners? I mean, they don't want anyone to see them, but they have not destroyed them. So are they waiting for something? Are they waiting? I want to know more. I'm fascinated.
And I got to say, this is that I want to know more as well. And And the thing is that this is something that's going on in the UFO communities, that there's been a bit of a kerfuffle between Rich Reynolds, the great UFO iconoclast, and Kevin Randall, who has a different perspective about what's going on. And I think that has not been doing much of a service, because they're just, you know, focusing on fighting each other and actually talking about what the slides may be and everything else.
I remember I was probably 20, early 20s when the Fox special about the Roswell footage.
Alien autopsy.
Alien autopsy. I remember that. And I was skeptical, but there was also that part of me that was like, man, you know, people are really investigating this, and you know, that phone did exist in 1947, and you know, there were a lot of people that were pointing out, you know, this, maybe this is real. And I was always fascinated by it. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, it was what it was, which was not real, to the best of my knowledge. But every time there's something new coming out, I mean, I was just reading the other day about the Majestic 12 documents, and you know, most people, I guess, are of the belief that these are not real. But there are some people that are like sticklers, like, this is the real deal. But I guess we'll never know. And so every time there's a new story about Roswell, it's kind of like, this would be pretty cool if something came out. I don't know what happened there, but it'd be pretty cool if something came out.
Absolutely. And that's exactly where the anomalous stands on most of these things. You know, I'm sure you've heard the phrase that we like to keep an open mind without our brains falling out. We do like to keep that open mind. We like to humor every possibility that is out there. As soon as we embrace something as being the God's honest truth, usually ends up being wrong or eventually proven to be wrong. So we're just hedging our bets and being agnostic about everything. And I think that's really what Fort tried to convey in his seminal books.
All right, one last question, then we'll do some plugs here and wrap it up. Is there anything that you just don't buy it? Are you open-minded to everything?
I am open-minded. I do have to say that I do not buy the fact that we've been visited by ancient aliens.
Ancient aliens is just out of the question.
I would have to say that it's highly unlikely. Ancient aliens, I really believe that it's just people not understanding how something's done. For example, archaeologists are wondering how the pyramids are built, but they're archaeologists, they're not engineers, so therefore they're not going to have an idea. There's a gap, so they filled in with aliens, just to make a very, very simple example.
So at the end of the day, if it turns out that that was a pyramid built 20,000 years ago, we just need to give humanity more credit.
Absolutely, because we are more clever than we give ourselves credit for, and it's actually something that is like, nice little pat on the back to realize we are capable of doing so many more great things.
Well, Chris, before we go, I want to give you a chance to plug The Anomalist, any of the other sites that you work for. I just want you to get all of it out there. If anybody listening to this right now is not reading The Anomalist on a regular basis, you need to start, like, immediately. So, Chris, let's get the word out.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. The site is called The Anomalist, ANOMALIST.com. We publish everything, you know, we publish our write-ups every day without fail, except for Christmas and other high holidays. And also, I do write at Who Forted, which is at whofortedblog.com. Yes, it is a fart joke based on Charles Fort.
Yes.
Yes, but, we do cover some serious stuff there, and I'm really happy that I have the opportunity to write for both these websites, and I'm also very happy the fact that I'm able to give something back to the community of people who do look into these weird things, and it really is nice to be a part of that. And also, I'm just very happy to have done your show, Brian.
Well, I want to thank you so much for doing the show. I mean, I was talking to my wife today. I was like a little kid. Knowing that I was going to get you on the show today, because I'm such a big fan of the website, and I I knew that you'd prepared a few things, and I'd prepared a few things, but I knew that when it started, it was like, I'm just going to ask this guy like 5,000 questions about 5,000 different things because I'm not going to be able to help myself. So I hope it was fun for you, and hopefully we can do it again, and maybe we'll concentrate on a certain topic next time. And
absolutely. That'd be great.
Yeah, but I really appreciate it, and an excellent job on your first ever podcast.
Well, thank you very much. It was great to be here, and you know, make sure you subscribe to you on iTunes.
That's right. That's right. And anomalous.com is the place to go, everybody. Chris Savia here. And Chris, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. And we'll be talking a lot of other stuff for the next hour. So stand by, everybody. Be back in a couple of minutes. That song took a weird turn right there. Back here on the After Dark Radio Show, everybody. Brian Alvarez here. Here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. After Dark Radio. Every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. Back here for another hour here in the program. That's Chris Savia there of The Anomalous, one of my favorite websites. Get up there and check that out. I cannot believe, I'm baffled that he has never been on a podcast before. Hopefully I can get him on like every week. I just had so much fun. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here on the program today. We got a lot of news to get into. And we're going to open up the phone lines and the email bin as well. What are you doing right now? What did you think of that interview? What did you think about what we talked about? What did you think of these Bigfoot howls? Did you hear these Bigfoot howls? Did you miss the first hour of the show? If you did, listen to this.
Shift change there?
Yeah.
That's a...
Actually gets more distressing the more I hear it. That howl, there was a, I believe it was the Ohio, is it Ohio? What was the other, Ohio Bigfoot howls? Now I've got to find out. I believe it was in Ohio that there were these Bigfoot howls. But when I, is it Kentucky? Not the ones from the beginning of the program. There's another very famous set of, famous, I'll just Google famous Bigfoot howls. See what comes up. It doesn't come up. All right. Oh, here it is. Ohio howl. Here we go. See, tell me if this is the same kind of sound. All right. This is from 1994. The first moaning howl attributed to Sasquatch. Might help if I... howl, all right. Those dogs. Here's an amplified and filtered version of these howls. What do you think these are? Let's play them again here. No good. Do not run into one of those in the middle of the night. It is no buys, as they say. Let's take a phone call. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. It's Shane from Orange County.
Shane, what's up?
Hey, nothing much. I just wanted to say, so tonight I kind of tuned in a little bit late, and the first thing I hear is those Bigfoot howls. So.
Good morning.
That's pretty good times.
Yeah.
Of course, I have no lights on, like you said. I was like, oh, that's pretty unnerving.
Yeah, I don't, I have heard a weird, I may have played him on this show, but there was a weird noise that was in the woods near my house that I could not explain, but it did not sound like that. That was horrifying. Yeah.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Is that how you got so interested in this stuff? Like, I think you were saying something about, you know, you're interested in it from a kid from those books, but is it just something from being from where you're at with all the woods and stuff? Is it just something... You just thought, hey, there's a Bigfoot around here? Or?
Well, you know, I was born in 1975, and this was, I mean, it was, that was Bigfoot Central. I don't know a better way to put it, but I did live in the Pacific Northwest, and so from a little kid, you know, I remember there were always, not necessarily Bigfoot stories like where I lived, because I didn't live like way out in the woods, although I did live far enough out in the woods that when I was a child, a bear ran through our yard. A little bear ran through the yard. Kids were chasing it with a stick, if I recall correctly. And I swear to God, this story is true. A bear ran through our yard. These kids were chasing it. And my dad looked up and he yelled, and I quote, "Is that your bear?" It was not their bear. But yeah, I lived out here in the woods. And so obviously I heard a lot about Bigfoot. And I don't even know. I just remember when I was a kid, I used to always go to used bookstores, and maybe my mom had seen a book or I saw a book, and it just kind of spiraled from there. But yeah, I've been interested in it forever.
Well, that's cool. And I was going to ask you one other thing too, because I know your guest was talking about, you know, ghosts and stuff. Have you ever actually experienced anything like that? Like, where do you stand on ghosts?
I have never experienced anything ghostly. I mean, nothing. I'm sure everybody has seen something in the sky that was kind of weird. And maybe if you're a big believer, you believe it's a UFO. If you're not, you just think you're seeing things. I mean, I've seen things like that every now and then, but I've never nothing ghost-like. I've never had a weird photograph. I've taken a million photographs, never seen anything weird, never felt anything, never felt the cold, nothing. Zero, nothing ghost-related ever in my whole life. So.
Yeah. Can I have like 2 minutes? Can I tell you my quick little ghost story and then I'll leave
Go
you alone
and
let you get back to the show?
Go for it.
All right. So I never got to meet my grandpa. I was, you know, really a small baby when he died. But apparently, because my dad is horrible with anything electronic, and I had a circuit breaker like right next to my bed when I was a little kid. And apparently, he always gave my dad crap about it. Like, hey, man, you better not touch that damn thing. You know, you're going to kill everybody. No, no, no. Well, one day, I guess the power goes out, and I was maybe 4 or 5. It's kind of hazy. But I just remember I'm laying in bed, and like you said, that chill, all of a sudden, I just got like really, really cold. And I was like, oh, this is weird. And I look to the left, and there's like this blue kind of like figure next to the electric box. And I just remember like all the power popped. I was playing my NES, playing some Kung Fu at the time. Good game. But I just remember all of a sudden, there's like this blue figure messing with the power box, and all of a sudden the lights come back on. My dad comes in the room and starts yelling at me, saying, why'd you mess with the electrics, with the electronics?
So let me get this
and
straight.
I remember,
you had a ghost fix your power outage.
Yeah, right? It's weird. And yeah, it's the weird part about it is both my mom and my dad were like, it's really weird. It smells like your grandpa's cologne in here. So it always
really?
Kind of tripped me out.
Now, was this the old full-body apparition, as they said in Ghostbusters?
That's the thing. I don't remember seeing, like, an actual, like, human head or anything. I just remember something blue near that thing.
Huh.
And it looked kind of like, you know, like, kind of like an outline of a person. But, obviously, I was really young, too, so, you know, memory could be hazy. But I just do remember that chill and then seeing something blue and the lights coming back on.
But, essentially, you are convinced.
Honestly, with that, yeah, I haven't seen much since. Like, I've gone to the Queen Mary here in Long Beach, and everybody, you know, has their ghost story about, oh my God, I saw this when I went there, and I've never seen anything there. Just, it's really weird. Like, sometimes I'll go to my grandma's house, obviously where my grandpa lived, and that same thing will pop up where it's like, oh, it really smells like his cologne in here, and like, everybody will say it all at once. It's just kind of trippy.
About that. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for the call tonight. Really appreciate it. And I'll scare you with some Bigfoot howls here in a couple of minutes again as I play these throughout the evening just to scare the hell out of everybody. You know, for those of you that listen to the shows I do on pro wrestling, every Thursday night I have my grandmother on the show. She's 84 years old. She'll be 85 in November. And if you've ever heard the show, I mean, she's sharper than I am. I mean, zero memory issues. She's just sharp as a tack. But when I was a little kid, I swear she told a ghost story. And I remember it creeped me out at the time. Something like it was, God, I can't remember. Something about somebody had gone upstairs at a party and they'd seen somebody on the bed who shouldn't have been there because they were dead. And I just remember the story, and it just scared me half to death. And I asked her about it years later, and she goes, I don't remember that. So it's driving me crazy. Maybe it's my memory, and she actually didn't tell me that story. It was somebody else. And I've confused it in my head because I was a little kid at the time. But I wish she could remember that story, or whoever told me that story could remember that story, because it was a great story. But my God, did it horrify me. So... you have a ghost story? What do you think of these howls? Phone lines are open, 855-478-4478. Give us a call, 855-478-4478, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. What is on your mind this lovely evening? Give us a call. You can follow me on Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, and tweet to at Brian Alvarez, hashtag DMRadioNet as well. Not DMRadio.net, just DMRadioNet. If you'd like to contact us on Twitter. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, Brian. This is Robert from Pennsylvania.
Robert, what's up?
I actually had a quick ghost story. It's actually been told quite a bit in my family quite often.
Excellent.
And, yeah, my grandfather, he moved my dad and his wife out into the countryside, and they had a country house, and it was really nice. And, you know, after work, my grandfather used to like to sit on a porch and just, you know, you know, it's really peaceful out there. And this one night, he noticed someone walking by, and it was an Amish man with his dog. And it was really odd because it was probably getting close to midnight. And, he said hello to him, and I guess the person kind of like looked at him a little bit, but really didn't say too much. But, so he thought that was kind of peculiar, but as he looked down, the person didn't have any legs. He was kind of floating down the country road. So I just, figured I'd call him and share that story.
So just like a bearded fella? I mean, how did he determine he was Amish?
Yeah, so he was dressed in that traditional kind of, what they would typically wear, so.
What a weird story.
The dog really didn't make any,
But the dog had legs.
Yeah, apparently, but the person didn't, so.
So what was his, did he talk about his immediate reaction? Because my immediate reaction would be to, die.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he used the term spook. He called it spook.
I'll say.
Yeah.
I'll say. A legless Amish man floating through the country road.
Yeah, that's something else, huh?
That's something else. Well, yeah, I want to thank you so much for the call. Anything else on your mind tonight?
No, I just love the show. You do a great job.
All right, thanks so much. I really appreciate that. I don't know about the Amish guy with no legs. I don't know how I'd react to that. I don't know. I've never seen anything ghostly. I've never experienced anything ghostly. I've never even, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Am I missing out? What's going on here? Do I just live in a haunt-free area? I mean, it is a brand new house. I don't think it's built over an Indian burial ground or anything like that. I've told this story many times. When I was a child, we used to always drive to Blackfoot, Idaho every summer. My grandparents lived there on my dad's side. And we would drive down there every summer to Blackfoot, Idaho. And they had a really old house. And you know what's amazing? I may have talked about this on an After Dark as well, but I was thinking about the house, and I remember it was in Blackfoot, and I don't know why I did this, but I texted my mom. I haven't been in this house in probably 20 years, and I longer probably actually, probably 25 years, but I texted my mom and I said, "Do you remember the address to the house in Blackfoot?" And she sent me the address, and I put it into Google Maps, and they've got Street View. And I was able to go back and look at the exact same, it was amazing to be able to go back. I hadn't been in this place in 25 years, and I could go back, and by using Google Maps, I could go right there to the house. I just thought that was so cool. I sound like an 80-year-old man right now, marveling at technology. But anyway, in this house, there was a cellar. Whatever the downstairs area is below like a kitchen or whatever. I guess it's a cellar. If I'm screwing this up, tweet me. I haven't had a cellar ever in my whole life. I've never had a cellar. But anyway, there was like a cellar there or whatever. And they had, in the cellar, there was a bed. And my grandparents, there was my dad and his brother and his sister and another brother. A big family. And so I guess there had been a bed down there, and my dad, when he was a kid, he was sleeping down there in the cellar, and he had a night hag experience, which is where you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel as if somebody is sitting on you and you can't move them and you're paralyzed and they're crushing you. And he had this experience. It was not just like sleep paralysis. He had somebody on him. And he fought and he fought and they're just crushing him. And finally he shoves him off and, he hears him hit the ground and he jumped up and he raced upstairs just freaking out. And of course, they go down there and there's nobody there. But he never, ever went down into that cellar again, at least to sleep. I'm sure he had to go down to get, corn or whatever that was stored down there. But never slept down there again. And I remember I never slept down there, but I do remember the door. It was like a trap door. That's how you got down there. It was like a legit, you open up this door and there's like a staircase leading down to the cellar. And I was like, my God, I'm not going down there. I will never sleep down there, especially after hearing the story. So, yeah, that's the closest I've come to anything haunting related. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, it's Dave from Wisconsin.
Dave from Wisconsin, what's up?
Can you hear me all right? I'm using a headset. It's kind of shitty.
Profanity, but yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I had a weird experience a couple of weeks ago where I've been very sleep deprived. It's finals week. I've had a lot of projects. So on a weekend, I'd been drinking and I decided to lay down in my bed for a
while. This doesn't sound like you, Dave. Drinking?
Ironically enough, I'm coming back from a bar.
Oh, come on. All right, so you've been drinking.
Right? Okay, so I've been drinking, but I hadn't been drinking a lot. But so I laid down in my bed to take a short nap so I could continue my research and whatnot. And
sure.
So, yes, my research.
Yeah.
And so I closed my eyes, and oddly enough, it wasn't a very large image, but when I closed my eyes, I saw an image of what I realized was basically a poker game. It was very weird. And and so I saw this and I was like, I looked at this and I thought, it was very disorienting at first because I was trying to take a nap, but I was still seeing an image and it was distracting me from trying to sleep.
Okay, stop right there for a second. So you closed your eyes and you saw a poker game.
Yeah, I couldn't see like who was participating in it, but I could see the center of like the table. So I mean, I've watched enough poker and played enough poker in my life to know that they were playing poker.
Okay.
And then like 2 days later, because this was on a Wednesday night, 2 days later, so it was a Friday night, my friend who was having a party at his house was like, do you want to come over and play poker with me? So I don't know if this is some sort of premonition or something, because I hadn't played poker in a long time. I hadn't seen poker in like, I don't know, I want to say like a couple of years.
So what do you what do you determine? What do you conclude from this experience? I guess is my question.
It was one of the strangest things because, I mean, like I said, I was trying to take a nap and then like some weird event happens, so be it, like I'm seeing an image of stuff happening. It was kind of like, astral projection or whatever they call it.
Sure.
Yeah, and so, I don't know, it was just strange. I thought you'd be interested. Oh my God, I can't wait to listen back to the interview you did because I missed it.
It is a very strange story. I don't know what to make of it. You're sure you weren't dreaming? It was a vision.
Right. No, I could open my eyes and then I could close my eyes and I'd see it again. It was weird.
And this never happened to you before?
No.
And you hadn't been drinking, or had you?
I had been.
You had been drinking.
I'd also been very sleep deprived too, so it was weird.
Sure. And have you? And are you getting sleep now? I'm very concerned for your well-being.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
I've been averaging about 12 hours a day.
Well, you got to catch up, you know.
Exactly.
All right. I want you to keep me updated with any other visions you have involving, of all things, poker.
Thanks. All right. Take it easy, Brian.
Thanks so much. I don't know. I guess nothing wrong with having a poker vision. I would hope that if I ever had a vision, it would be something more worthwhile than a poker game. You know what I mean? If you want to email me, brian@wrestlingobserver.com, make sure you put After Dark in the subject line, and I will read as many of them as I can. I'm wearing some KT tape right now. I talked on this show about my tendinosis and I've been trying various alternative therapies to heal my tendinosis. And in my latest, I have had 5 acupuncture sessions, and I am now wearing KT tape on my wrist, and I've got a wrist brace on my forearm. I guess this is not really an alternative therapy, but I am giving it a shot. The acupuncture is I don't know what to make of it. I went in for acupuncture, and I went in a couple of times, and I felt a lot better. But then I went in for a massage, and after the massage, I felt worse. And so I told the acupuncturist about my massage, and he told me, no. No massage. He said he was trying to balance my chi, and if I got the massage, it would unbalance my chi. I don't know what to make of any of this. All I know is I want my tendinosis to heal. And I'm to the point now where I'm having someone jab needles into me. So the best I've come up with, besides the KT tape, is my buddy Craig is suggested that I put a like a tennis elbow band around my forearm. With the theory being, and I believe this actually, that oftentimes, if you have issues with your wrist, it's actually issues with the muscles and the tendons in your forearm. And so he said that he had had wrist injuries and pain in the past, and he put a tennis elbow band around his forearm, and within a few weeks, he was good as new. So that's what I'm going to be trying for now. That's going to be my current regimen to try to solve this problem. I thought of this, by the way, because somebody had sent me some suggestions for alternative therapies for my wrist issues, as I had talked about here on this program previously. So there you go. All right. We have got an email here from Mark. He says, I am a big fan of the show. I really enjoy it. Thank you for the entertainment. I wanted to ask if you have seen The Ghost in the movie 3 Men and a Baby. If you watch the window, the actors walk through a room, and there is a creepy little boy in the window, and when they walk directly back, there is a shotgun in the window. I heard speculation that the film was shot in a home where a little boy was shot. Movie company tried to downplay it as a Ted Danson cutout, but what about the shotgun? If you haven't seen it, YouTube 3 Men and a Baby ghost scene. Interesting. He also wants to know if I've seen the videos on the Sandy Hook school shooting conspiracy. No, I have not. Now, the 3 Men and a Baby ghost scene, as I was reading this email, I was thinking about the Ted Danson cutout, because that is the official explanation for the ghost in the 3 Men and a Baby scene, that it is a Ted Danson cutout. I had not heard about the shotgun. I don't think the movie was actually shot in a home where a little boy was killed. I believe it was shot on a soundstage. I could be wrong, but I believe it was shot on a soundstage. Now, I don't know what to make of the shotgun. And believe it or not, it's too late at night and it's too dark for me to watch this video. I'm not in the mood at the moment to watch this because I'm getting to the point in this show, after all the Bigfoot howls and all of the strange stories, that if I see something scary, I'm going to jump 10 feet in the air. And so I'm not going to Google this right now, but I will later on. I will Google that and check it out. If anybody has any comments on this, you're welcome to email or tweet me about that. By the way, I just want to direct everybody very quickly. AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the website. Once again, that is AfterDarkRadioShow.com. If you need anything, if you need the phone numbers, they're up there, 855-478-4478. That is the toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada if you want to give us a call. If you'd like to send us emails, the address is up there at the website, brian@wrestlingobserver.com. Make sure you put After Dark in the subject line. And there is a link there to my producer. His name is Garrett. He is awesome. And if you'd like to be on the program, he is the man to talk to because he will help you out in terms of getting on this show. Also up there is the latest program that we've produced. That is the May 2nd show with Maddie Beckerman talking about his film Alien Abduction, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, theaters around the country. It was a great interview talking all sorts of things, including a lot of information about past life regression. If you'd like to hear that show, I suggest you head up there and check it out because it is not going to be up there forever. It is going to be up there until this program concludes, at which point this program is going to take over. So make sure you head up there and check that out. All right, I got a lot of different articles to get into here today. As always, we read a lot of stuff from our various websites. Linked up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com is a number of different programs, or a number of different articles, I'm sorry. I was actually reading one of those right there, which is why I got confused. I'm going to read a couple of these here. If you've got comments on anything, you are welcome to give us a call, 855-478-4478, or send me any of your comments on the old Twitter machine, or you can email me, brian@wrestlingobserver.com, and I will discuss anything that you would like, any of those mediums. This here from unexplained-mysteries.com. A scientist create an alien organism in a lab. It says the first ever semi-synthetic microorganism is very different from all other life forms on Earth. While very much terrestrial in origin, the genetically modified microbe possesses a unique genetic code thanks to the addition of an extra artificial piece of DNA that makes it completely unlike anything else alive. Created from an E. coli bacterium, the microorganism is potentially the first step towards a future in which microbial life forms can be custom built to possess key medical or industrial properties. While currently capable of replicating and passing on its new genetic information, the microbe has not yet been able to use it to produce any novel proteins. The very first ever semi-synthetic microorganism. It is an alien organism that scientists have created in the lab. What do you think about this concept? I know that some people are very concerned, not so much about this, a semi-synthetic microorganism, but just the creation of various things, including artificial intelligence. There are people who believe that as the creation of artificial intelligence gets to the point where we're really creating some, I don't know if you'd call them life forms, but some carriers of artificial intelligence. I don't even know what the term would be, but there are people very concerned that as we move on in the creation of artificial intelligence, we will be very much putting our own humanity in jeopardy. What do you think about this? Are you concerned that the rise of artificial intelligence will eventually wipe out humanity? What happens when we create something that is so intelligent that perhaps it is more intelligent than we are? What would something more intelligent than we are think of us? When we see, for example, somebody made this analogy. I don't know where I read it. But when we walk around, we look down and we see an ant, a number of ants. We think nothing of them. And the ants themselves have absolutely no idea. They know nothing of us. So we sit here and we think about how intelligent we are. But what happens if somebody from another... What if somebody from another galaxy, an alien life form from another galaxy, visits the Earth and they are significantly more intelligent than we are? What are they thinking about us? Are we worth keeping around? I don't know. Do they look at us? Do they look at us like, I mean, for example, what do we do with chickens? We eat them. You know, a lot of animals we raise merely to eat. But there are other animals that, for whatever reason, especially here in this country, we take care of. You know, I have cats. I don't eat my cats. I take care of my cats. What's the difference between a cat and a chicken? I mean, they're both life forms. One is more intelligent than the other. But they are both life forms. They're both animals. You know, they both raise and take care of their young. They have feelings. But one of them we slaughter and eat, and the other we take care of. If they came here, what would they do to us? Would they slaughter and eat us, or would they take care of us? I don't know. I have no idea. But it is, to many people, a grave concern. Also here, we've got a new dinosaur. The long-nosed Pinocchio Rex. Part of the same family as the Tyrannosaurus Rex. I remember when I was a kid, I was a boy, obviously, so I loved dinosaurs. Man, I loved dinosaurs. I thought I knew every dinosaur there was. And now here I am, 38 years old, and there's so many new dinosaurs. And some of the dinosaurs I thought I knew, apparently I didn't. So we got another one here. A long-nosed Pinocchio Rex. An elongated head filled with razor-sharp teeth. It would have been no less of an effective killing machine than its more famous cousin. Both species were thought to have lived alongside one another 66 million years ago. It might have looked a little comical, said Dr. Steve Broussat, but it would have been as deadly as any other tyrannosaur and maybe even a little faster and stealthier. I remember when I first saw Jurassic Park and they had like velociraptors. And I was like, what is with these new dinosaurs? I don't remember velociraptors from when I was a little kid. This is ridiculous. But indeed, they had all sorts of new dinosaurs in that movie, and it was quite a blow to me as a young man to realize that, in fact, I did not know everything. What else do we have? In financial news, not often we talk financial news here, but as someone whose goal is to eventually be a diabolical billionaire, I thought this was rather interesting. At some point, this according to the Telegraph, within 25 years, we will likely see the first ever trillionaire. With Bill Gates, it says here, widely seen as the front runner. The world's first trillionaire could emerge within just 25 years, financial forecasters have claimed. Bill Gates, the Microsoft founder and the current richest man on Earth, richest person on Earth, is expected by many to be the first to reach trillionaire status. If the world's great fortunes continue to grow at their current rate, boosted by the rapid wealth creation in emerging markets such as India and China, then Gates or one of the planet's super elite could have $1 trillion to their name by 2039. According to predictions, and others believe there will be 11 trillionaires within just two generations. And make sure to point out here, for those of you that don't understand, $1 trillion is a million. The equivalent of $140 for every person on the planet. It is enough money to buy every last inch of property in central London at today's prices. Which actually, I'm surprised that's all you could buy with $1 trillion. Now that I think about it, what would you do with $1 trillion? For the love of God, what would you do with this? It's ridiculous. What does it even mean to have $1 trillion? What does it mean to have $1 billion? What are you going to do with $1 billion? I mean, really all you can do is just give it away, right? Do good things for the world? Hopefully the world's first trillionaire, spends his time giving it away and doing good for the world. That is my hope. What else do we have here? We've got a couple of interesting articles on all different ends of the spectrum. And don't forget my my Bigfoot howls, which I'm going to play again before the night is up. If you're sitting in your bed right now, the lights are out, and you're just enjoying yourself listening to this program, be ready that when you least expect it, the Bigfoot howls are going to be playing here in your ear. Don't want to scare anybody, but just so you know. All right, what do we have here? The end of food. This is from the New Yorker. In December of 2012, three young men were living in a claustrophobic apartment in San Francisco's Tenderloin District, working on a tech startup. They had received $170,000, which the last I checked is significantly less than $1 trillion, from the incubator Y Combinator, but their project, a plan to make inexpensive cell phone towers, had failed. They were down to $70,000. They resolved to keep trying out new software ideas until they ran out of money. How to make the funds last? Well, one big problem remained, and that was food. They had been living on ramen, corn dogs, and Costco frozen quesadillas, supplemented, it says, by vitamin C, just to make sure they could stave off scurvy. But the grocery bills were adding up. The food was a large burden. He tried out his own version, this being Rob Reinhart, one of them, of McDonald's dollar meals and $5 pizzas from Little Caesars. After a week, he said, "I felt like I was going to die." So he tried an all-kale diet, ended up starving. So what did they determine? What did they do? Well, they began to wonder if perhaps food was an inefficient way of getting what we needed to survive. What if they went straight to the raw chemicals? This fella here, Reinhart, 25 years old, took a break from experimenting with software, and he studied textbooks on nutritional biochemistry and the websites of the FDA, the USDA, and the Institute of Medicine. He compiled a list of 35 nutrients required for survival. He then handed off the list to the internet, ordered them in pill form, poured everything into a blender, some water, created a result that looked like gooey lemonade, and then he said, "I started living on it." He called it Soy Lent. He says that, "I feel like the $6 million man. My physique has improved, my skin is clearer, my teeth whiter, my hair thicker, and my dandruff is gone. I haven't eaten a bite of food in 30 days, aside obviously from his Soylent, and it has changed my life." They bring up here one of Silicon Valley's cultural exports in the past 10 years, the concept of life hacking, where you devise tricks to streamline the obligations of daily life, thereby freeing yourself up for whatever you would rather be doing. Boy, have I read a lot about life hacking. There's actually a website, Life Hacker, that you can go to, and you can get a lot of tips and tricks about how to make, I don't know if necessarily make your life easier is the best way to term it, but certainly you can find ways to make many things that you do in your life, maybe efficient is the wrong word, effective. How to do daily tasks in a more effective manner. This brings me back to Soylent here. He is now selling Soylent to people around the world. Last month, it says, I guess Soylent has been shipping for about a month now. There's a Soylent headquarters, and apparently the idea is you can live on Soylent and not eat food. if you knew that you could stop eating food and you could merely drink this Soylent, would you do it? Or is there a joy in eating food that cannot be replicated? I have had periods in my life where I was training very hard for something or another, and I was dieting very hard, and I don't want to say I lived on protein shakes because that was not the case, but there were times where I drank a fair number of protein shakes, and I ate a very, very strict diet, and I did not enjoy various, I did not, for example, I remember one time, it was Thanksgiving, and because I was training and dieting, I did not enjoy Thanksgiving dinner with my family. I had a protein shake for Thanksgiving, and I was not giving thanks when I was having a protein shake and everybody else was eating real food. So I don't know if something like Soylent, for example, is something that will really catch on with the masses or is really the way of the future. Would you like to live a life where you simply, in a drink, provided your body with nutrients and you no longer had to devour your food like an animal? Would you like to live a life like that? Maybe life would be simpler if we didn't have to worry about eating. However, I once read a book about, I've read many books actually, about living a long, healthy life. That's one of my goals. I think many people have that goal. I want to live a long, healthy life. And there are a lot of books you can read. They all tell you something different. But one of them followed a lot of individual people over a long period of time to try and find out why some people lived a long time and others did not. And I can't remember the name of the book, but, you know, when you hear about a guy who's 115 years old and you say, what's the secret of life? And the guy goes, the secret of life is apples or something wacky. It's kind of like, really? That's the secret of life? I don't think the secret of life, long life, is apples. Or maybe he'll say, I don't know. I comb my hair. I brush my hair 150 times each day. That's the secret to long life. All of this is preposterous. But in this study that this guy did of longevity, he found that the secret to longevity, one of the secrets to longevity, was to be a prudent person. Someone who was not crazy. And I know that sounds obvious, but prudence, people who are prudent are usually the longest lived. Now, anyway, in this book, they talked about a lot of other, you know, the Mediterranean diet and this diet, that diet, this way of life, that way of life. And one of the things that really helped people stay young was community. And they found that a lot of cultures where the family unit and friends would sit down and they would enjoy a meal together. Maybe not every night, but maybe a few times a week, maybe at least once a week. But the process of everybody getting together and you all enjoy a meal together and you relax and you laugh and maybe you have a little wine, but cultures that ate together in general were usually longer lived than cultures that did not. And I'm sure you could argue that, well, yeah, cultures that ate together had food. Maybe unlike cultures that didn't have a lot of food, so they didn't eat together. I don't know. But the point is, there are a lot of benefits to enjoying a meal with your friends and family. And I don't know if getting rid of food is something that in the future, in my lifetime, I am ever going to see. I, before this show, was out with my buddies. We all went, we trained jiu-jitsu for 3 hours, and then we went and we had a meal at the Mexican restaurant. And it was a great time. Saw a buddy that had moved away, and he was back in town. You know, we all had some laughs, had some Mexican food. Some people had some liquor, but it was a great time, and it was a great community. It was a lot of fun, and I just don't see someday all of us getting together and going to the Soylent restaurant, and we all drink some Soylent, and we move on with our lives. I just don't see that happening. But hey, maybe I am old school. What else do we have here? Soylent is old news. It said Vice did a documentary on it like a year ago. How is that possible? Don't tell me I'm reading old. Nope, this is from May 2014. It says Soylent just got shipping a month ago. I don't know. Maybe this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is from the New Yorker. But I guess Vice did a documentary on it. So there you go. And this person here suggests that my buddy Vinny could benefit from Soylent. Yeah, you know, I probably could. He's getting married in a while. If he wants to trim down, I guess I could introduce him to Soylent. I wouldn't be averse to... I have one protein shake a day. I wouldn't mind switching it out from some Soylent if it had all these nutrients that I would need to feel like Superman, as this fella claims that he now feels like. So yeah, I'd be open to that idea. But removing it earlier, I don't know. This is from New York, NBC New York. Speaking of old people, this is an article about a 111-year-old New Yorker. He is on the Upper West Side, and he has been certified as the oldest man in the world. The oldest man in the world is only 111 years old. Think about that. We had a guest on recently, and he was talking about Noah's Ark, the story of Noah's Ark. And we occasionally talk religion here on this program. What do you believe? What do you believe about what do you believe about particular religions? Are you a religious person? What do you believe? We've talked about this here and there on the show. And I always did find it interesting that that in the Bible, you know, around the time of Noah, if you read the Old Testament, folks lived to be very old, it claimed. You know, so-and-so was 900 years old when he begat Jebediah or whatever. But then God in the Bible eventually decreed that the lifespan of a man or woman would be maximum 120 years. And how interesting is it that I believe the oldest person, the oldest verified person who ever lived, I probably should go to Wikipedia, I could just be spouting nonsense here, but I believe the oldest verified person who has ever lived was 124 years old. Let's see what Wikipedia has to say about oldest person. I believe 124 years old, he was from Japan. Let's find out if I was correct here. All right, the oldest people ever. The oldest systematic verification of longevity has only been practiced in recent decades and only in certain parts of the world. The oldest living person, it says here, is Misao Okawa, who is 116 years, 65 days old. And they're allegedly, according to Wikipedia here, still alive. Still alive. So, that would mean that this article is incorrect. Now, I remember in the Guinness Book of World Records, there was a Japanese man who was 124 years old, but I don't see that anywhere in this list. The oldest on this list, interestingly enough, when talking about the Bible and 120 years, the maximum lifespan, according to this, the oldest people ever, only one human being verified has ever lived to be more than 120 years old. And that is this Jean Calment of France, 122 years old in 164 days. Died in 1997. And the second oldest person only made 119 years old. Sarah Nous of the United States. And look at that, the top three oldest people, two of them are from the United States. Who is the guy that was allegedly 124 years old? Where is it? Perhaps this would be oldest person since 1955. Here I am just talking Wikipedia here. Just searching Wikipedia here live on the air. Am I out of my mind? If anybody can tell me the name of the Japanese guy that supposedly was 124 years old, please let me know. Because this is now going to drive me absolutely crazy. Anyway, to this 111-year-old New Yorker who allegedly had been certified the oldest living man in the world, even though according to Wikipedia there is somebody older, it says that he shrugged off the title. In an interview with NBC4 New York on Monday, when asked his secret to long life, "I don't know," he said. "I simply did not die earlier. I have no idea how this happened." So there you go. If you're wondering the secret to long life, I can tell you that the oldest living man in the world, according to NBC New York, has absolutely no idea. "I do not know. I simply did not die earlier. I have no idea how this happened." So there you go. He was born in 1903. He does attribute some of his health to a clean diet. He eats chicken, fish, and no alcohol, and he participated in gymnastics and swimming in his younger days. Okay, here's the explanation. He's the world's oldest man, but he is not the oldest person. He is outranked by 66 women, including a 116-year-old Japanese woman, Misao Okawa, who is recognized as the world's oldest person. So there you go. And Will here has sent me to a motherboard.vice.com, the story on Soylent. I will retweet that to everybody. You can go up to at Brian Alvarez on Twitter and check that out. And there you go. There was apparently a woman named Miriam Amash who died at the age of 124, says Jay. It does not appear to be on the Wikipedia here, so I guess I'll have to investigate that further and find that Guinness Book World Records from my childhood that apparently was mistaken. No 124-year-old man. Drives me crazy when I find out that things that I had learned as a child ended up not being true. And by the way, the longest unambiguously documented human lifespan, the woman from France, Jeanne Calment, who died at age 122 years in 1997. She was born in 1865, and when she was 12 or 13, everybody, she had met Vincent van Gogh. So there you go. All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up here. Before we go, as promised, here we go.
Yeah.
That's a...
Bigfoot howls, everybody. All right, we are going to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody for listening here this evening. Make sure you head up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com. That is our website. Everything you ever wanted to know is up there right now about this program. AfterDarkRadioShow.com, our Facebook page, Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. This program is going to be up on the website within about 20 minutes, so head up there and check that out. Also, make sure you check out the Dark Matter website. ArtBell.com is the place to go, and if you head up to ArtBell.com, you can link up to the Dark Matter Radio Network, which, of course, is where you're listening to this program. A lot of great programming. If you've only been listening to this show, there's a lot of great stuff you're missing, including a brand new show that is now preceding us every single Friday night at 10 o'clock p.m. following Fade to Black. So make sure you check that out. We got a lot of stuff coming up tomorrow. Capricorn Radio, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Dreamland Astronomy Cast, Exploration, and the Secret Teachings. This program will be airing throughout the day tomorrow as well, so make sure you check that out. And that is it from here, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks with a brand new show.